Blog Talk Radio.
Beauty Shop for the Soul is a magnificent transformation to restore, cleanse, and tap into the essence of who you truly are. Beauty Shop for the Soul gives you the experience of a new makeover from inside out. Beauty Shop for the Soul was a universal gift to be birthed into the world to host Joanne Buckner. Joanne received this incredible gift through a meditation to share with others to awaken the soul. Beauty Shop for the Soul is a true magical process of the divine being you truly are. Now sit back, relax, and let Beauty Shop for the Soul take you on a new, exciting journey with host Joanne Buckner.
Welcome on this journey of Beauty Shop for the Soul. Do you know how creative you are, really, innately? All of us are. So I want to talk to you today about your thoughts and how creative they are. Every single thought you think is permeated with power and has wings to fly. Your thoughts are creative. It is likely that you probably already have evidence from your own personal experiences that your thoughts are creative. Have you ever had a sense of connection with the creativity of your thoughts? In other words, a thought from you, and sometimes you're not even aware of these thoughts until things start happening in your life and you begin to wonder, where did they come from? And how did this happen to you? And why is this happening to you again? Well, imagine the same power that permeates everything in the entire universe flows throughout your entire body from head to toe, from center to circumference. Every single part of you, every cell in your body, and the neuroscientists tell us nowadays that some say 50 trillion, some 75, and some 100 trillion cells, but regardless of however many it is, every single cell has this kind of all the other cells. Imagine what that must be like when it's difficult for us to just keep up with ourselves, much less what everybody else in our universe is doing. And yet, we have an entire universe within us just teeming with creativity. So all that there is in the entire universe is at any given moment flowing in you, through you, around you, as you, because it is you. And not only do your thoughts have power to create and imagine the wings to fly, just like butterflies pollinate the flowers, the energy in your thoughts goes right out into the ethers so that they become connected with any other thought vibration at that same vibrational frequency. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but right now, I'm Joanne Buckner, the founder of Beauty Shop for the Soul. Beauty Shop for the Soul is a program of transformation. In the traditional beauty shop, you go because you want to get a new hairdo. It's something that you do periodically if you want to look good on a regular basis. One hairstyle is not about to last you for a lifetime. Neither will one-fifth to the beauty shop for the soul last a lifetime. It is an ongoing process. However, you get to make every decision about your own life. You do that anyway. Sometimes by not making a decision, you have just made a decision, and of course, what happens, it leaves you open to decisions that other people make about your life. So one of the things we discover about ourselves is that if we don't make a choice, however, it puts us in the passenger seat as opposed to being the driver on this journey that we call life. And so in this exploration about our thoughts and the creativity, we also have this understanding, and by the way, anybody that wants to speak to me at any time, whether you want to share an experience regarding your experience or about the Beauty Shop for the Soul, I'm going to be inviting you to speak, but I want to share a story or two, so be sure you stay online, and I'm sure that there are others that want to hear what you have to say as much as I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. But I want you to get a clear picture of your thoughts and the journey that they take when they go out from you, even as you sleep. Your thoughts through your subconscious mind goes out into the universe and then just like a magnet draws to itself any person, place, event, experience, or thing that is perfectly aligned at the same vibrational frequency in which your thoughts are going out. Now, mind you, it doesn't matter whether these thoughts are good, bad, or indifferent. If you have fear, doubt, if you have anger, frustration, resentment, revenge, regret, anything that's out of alignment with your true nature, then that's the kind of connection that you can look forward to in your waking hours and even in your dreams. And so we have these thoughts that have power, and we are having access to all of the intelligence of the universe because there's not a spot where God is not. So wherever God is, all that God is there. Omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniactive. My goodness, this is you have at your discretion, and it is an opportunity to participate in conscious consciousness in the things that we do and think and say about ourselves, because it is what we say to ourselves about ourselves that we then see perpetuated and reflected back to us from the world, and erroneously some of us think that it's the world, that there's nothing wrong with the world. One of the little stories that I remember from yesteryear is about a man who was babysitting his own preschool child, but he had some business that he wanted to take care of, and he wanted to be undisturbed. At least that's what he thought. And so he had a puzzle that he, and of course it was an elementary puzzle, so that the son could actually work on putting it together, and the father thought that it would take him some time to do that. So he put the pieces of the puzzle on the table, set the child down to put the puzzle together, and then went about his business. And to his surprise, 15 minutes later, the kid was standing by his side, finished with the puzzle. And in amazement, the father said, "How in the world?" And by the way, the puzzle itself was a map of the world. And so the father asked the child, "How in the world did you put together a puzzle, a map of the world, so fast?" And the little boy said, "It was actually easy, Daddy." He said, "I turned the puzzle over, and on the back side of the world was a man. And when I put the man together in the puzzle, the world fell into place." And so that's the way it is with us when we put ourselves together, because when we are operating from fear, doubt, disbelief, and all of these things that are contrary to your true essence, which is love, that is the image that you were made, the substance, in fact, that you were made from. Since God is love, and God is everywhere present, then love and God are coexistent and co-eternal, and wherever God is, love is in its entirety. And since God made each and every one of us out of his own divine substance, because that's all there was in the beginning, so God used what there was to use, and just like a drop of water from the ocean contains all the elements of the ocean, you too, I, me, myself and I, and all of us, here, limitless potential and infinite possibilities. So these thoughts that we have the potential to go out on the wings of love. But if we don't know who we are and whose we are, and we've allowed ourselves to be influenced by the world, because most of the opinions that we have of ourselves were not original with us. However, as we adopt those opinions and begin to nurture them, meaning pay a lot of attention to these things, then we become the parent to the thought. So you have the seed, the soil, and the plant, which is the child, mother, father, child. That is the same way it is in the thinking process. Every seed must multiply after its own kind. That is the law of the seed, and it is the law of our life. We have accepted, in many cases, opinions that other people have given to us that unbeknownst to us, usually it's at a very early age and stage. And so one of the stories I want to just share with you is about someone that was born. His name is Les, and Les was a twin. He and his twin brother were born on the floor of an abandoned building in Liberty City, Florida, and they were given up for adoption at 6 weeks of age. They were adopted by a single woman, meaning a woman without a husband. And in addition to these twin boys, she adopted five other children, giving her a total of seven adopted kids. And she herself was in her late 40s, very close to age 50. Imagine that. But Leslie was diagnosed as educably, mentally retarded. And the prognosis for his future was not glowing or even promising. And like many of us, Leslie accepted the so-called expert opinion given to him about him, and he went around announcing the fact to others until he met the right person at the right time. Leslie was in high school, and his teacher requested that he write an assignment on the chalkboard. Initially, Leslie reacted, explaining to his teacher that he was unable to fulfill that assignment. And when the teacher asked him why, he said, "Because I'm educably, mentally retarded," sounding like a badge of courage. But his instructor, fortunately, instructed him very firmly with wisdom and compassion, enhanced by the sound of assurance. He said to him, don't ever, Leslie, about yourself again. It's absolutely not true. I think he said that part. I may have just added that. Anyway, he encouraged Leslie to never announce, never even have the thought that he was less than what he really was. And so Leslie, to his credit, listened to his teacher, and then he changed his life course. Instead of referring to himself as educably, mentally retarded, Les took his life in his own hands. He became a disc jockey first, and then he became a politician, and eventually a motivational and inspirational speaker. So somewhere along that time frame, I met Les myself. I had the privilege of meeting him back in the 1980s, and I traveled across the country from the West Coast to the Midwest in Michigan, specifically to meet this man. I was so impressed with what I was hearing out of his mouth, actually. And so subsequent to that occasion, Les Brown, he invited me to be a guest at his upcoming workshop called Back to Back. That was in Detroit, and that was back in the 80s, as I mentioned. But the interesting thing about this person who had been educably, mentally retarded, diagnosed by the medical people, he was earning at that time, back in the 80s, $5,000 for a one-hour speech. $5,000 for 1 hour, and he could speak as many hours as he was invited to or decided that he wanted to. And during that same time frame, his fee for his service doubled from $5,000 to $10,000. That was back in the 1980s. Well, I met Leslie again years later, and now Leslie, his fees are $20,000 for a one-hour speech. How marvelous is that? How marvelous is it that this person who had, without knowing it, subscribed to, I don't even know what to call it, that's a lie, and I'm not suggesting that the people thought it was a lie, but it certainly wasn't the truth of him, nor is it the truth of any of you, no matter who said what to who about you. You have something inside of you, just as Les Brown did, just as we all do, because it was implanted in you and is there at your disposal. So Another question. What do you think that Les Brown had in common with Thomas Edison, for example? Well, Thomas Edison had a similar situation as he was in elementary school. His teacher sent a note home to his mother instructing her that this child was deaf. Teacher would actually make that kind of comment about a student. She told the parents that he was incapable of learning. This is the man that really makes it possible for us to even have this connection today, though he never heard of computers and et cetera, but through his invention of the light bulb and all the subsequent things, this man went through 10,000 experiments before landing on his dream, which was to invent a light bulb and bring electricity to the world, actually. And there's so much more about him. But I want to get to those who are waiting on the phone, and I want to just share one other story first because I think it's so phenomenal, because often when we have certain conditions and situations, we think that we're the only ones that are experiencing whatever it is that we're experiencing, but it's not usually the truth. And even if it were, you could be the person. You have everything you need within you, and the scripture says, command ye me and see the works of my hand. And so that's what Les Brown did, and he talks freely about his philosophical beliefs and et cetera. But I want to share this other story, and I love this. I love all these stories, but I love this particular woman that actually was born the 20th child in a family of 22 children of the same mother. Ooh, can you imagine going through that process 22 times? But her mother did, and at a young age, this child was sickly. It was a little girl, and she not only was sickly, at some point early on in life, she had scarlet fever. Excuse me. And that scarlet fever advanced into what was then called polio. And so there began a lot of treatment for the polio. Her mother had to carry her 50 miles each way for medical treatment. This child wore braces on her legs. And because she had so many siblings in her family, they actually made a game of the exercises that were medically prescribed for this little girl. And they were a very close-knit family. And so they would do these activities with this child. And when the parents left home, this little girl would take the braces off of her own legs. Now, she was teased by her peers. And, of course, she wanted to play games with them, but no one would ever choose her when they were the captain and had the opportunity to select the team members. She was not one that was chosen. And so she didn't really like her friends that much. To allow that to be a motivation for her, so she began her own regimen of exercise and activities. And at 12 years of age, she was playing backyard basketball with those braces off of her legs. By now, some of you probably know the person that I'm referring to, Wilma Rudolph. Wilma Rudolph, who had polio as a young child, many years later would enter into the Olympics in 1956 at age 16 years. 16 years of age, she participated in the Olympics in Melbourne, Australia, and then came back again in 1960. And in 1960, Wilma Rudolph was, she took home 3 gold medals. She was called the fastest woman in the world at that time. She was in the 100, I think, and 200 meter. I don't want to call the functions because I'm not quite sure. I know she had 3 gold medals that she took home. And so here's somebody, again, that had a diagnosis and in her own consciousness decided, motivated by the teasing of her peers, she could have reacted another way. So I invite you that anything that you have thought up to this moment that you could not do because of what anybody said to you, or more especially what you say to yourself about yourself. There is a divine and perfect pattern in each and every one of us. Remember those 50, 7,500 trillion cells that you have in your body? All of them with this intelligence that is everywhere present. It is that substance which Les Brown tapped into. It is that substance that Wilma Rudolph tapped into, and it is the same substance that is in each and every one of us, that each and every one of us have this ability and this power to tap into as well. And so I'm going to invite a caller to come on the line, and I'll come back to you, and we'll talk about some other people who were able to listen to the still, small voice within. Hold on.
Hello. My name is Lori. Hi.
Hi. This is area code 740.
Yes.
Okay. And your name?
My name is Lori.
Lori. Hi, Lori. What city are you calling from?
I am calling from Ohio.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Ohio. That's the city that, I mean, the state that I was speaking of Les Brown a while ago. I don't know if you know that name or not, but he lived many years.
Yes.
That's where he was a politician, in Ohio.
Yes, okay, wonderful.
Yes, and so do you have today, Lori, or what question?
Do you readings, or are we just discussing frequencies and positive, and just keeping the discussion going about positive attitudes and frequencies?
I don't do readings, Lori. However, I am a licensed practitioner with the United Centers for Spiritual Living, so I do some coaching and, you know, the
awesome.
Whole idea. Are you familiar with practitioners and United Centers for Spiritual Living?
I'm not familiar with that. That's interesting.
You're not familiar with it. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about what that means, and then you can, if you like, share your concern or your question. But and incidentally, I also have a master's in counseling and quite a bit of other training. I've been trained in various kinds of energy work, and all of this, that underneath all of this is the same goal. The goal is to remove energetically whatever energy that has obscured our ability to see who we really are and the potential that we are endowed with. And so it's like, you know, if you had a dozen people that wanted to go to New York, you wouldn't have to take the same path. Some could fly, some could. I have a friend here where I live who, I'm on the West Coast and near the West Coast, that is, and this woman happens to be a biker. And she rode her bike alone, meaning without a physical companion, from San Francisco to New York City, and then back across, traveling independent of a physical companion. Well, somebody else, obviously, on a plane would have been there much sooner, but they still both be in New York. You could go by bus, you could go by train. There are many ways that you can go, and so I say that these modalities are like that. And ultimately, we get to choose, you know, how we're going to travel, and, of course, that may have some impact on the condition that we're in when we arrive there, but the ultimate goal is to be able to enjoy the journey instead of struggling along the way. Because ultimately, like Wayne Dyer said, when we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. And so a licensed practitioner, there's a training curriculum and that allows a function like the academic and spiritual arm to the minister. So there's a certain amount of testing that's done prior to that time, not unlike when I did a master's in counseling. And in this master's degree, there were lots of tests that were required, et cetera. So just to give you some kind of idea of what a practitioner is about, I've also had some training with Eric Pearl, I don't know if you know that name or not, but he's quite renowned in the work that he does in the world. And lots of people have had healing with that. I've done work with Michael Rice, R-Y-C-E, who has this program called Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Because often the experiences that we have were that maybe in a different form or with a different name. And so ultimately it always comes back to us, the individual, and our ability and willingness to have a serious look into the way we look at things, how we think, because the philosophy of science of mind is there's only one mind. Since everything came from the same source and substance, then we all have our own individualized use and expression of that. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. It's very interesting. Yes.
Okay.
So as far as a question, I think I have a pretty positive attitude about my life in general and where I am and where I'm going and what I desire. So I guess the thing that I question the most at hand would be that I desire to help others, and I currently own a business, and I believe I do that. I feel like I'm right where I belong, doing what I do when I am with the people and the customers that I have. But I've been desiring to go out and speak and teach, but I'm not positive about the topic of which I'll be helping others with. So, trying to figure out a way to, you know, to do that, to communicate what I'm about, my story, and how to give people hope.
Let me ask you a question, Lori.
Sure.
I heard you, well, first of all, just the word desire itself means of a follower. And so, you know, no idea, and that's a great idea, and no idea ever, ever comes without the total mechanics for the complete manifestation of the idea. When we try to figure out things ourselves, usually we block the very information that we are wanting to have. We block it by trying to do it ourselves. We live in a universe of infinite intelligence. So even when we are doing well, and I, you know, trust that you are exactly what you said, you know, you're in a good place and space, but in the context of infinity, what would be the distance between where you are and infinity versus wherever you come from to achieve whatever it is that you're achieving at this time? I'm a storyteller, by the way. I didn't say that earlier. But storytelling was the first method of healing because, you know, before there were doctors and facilities like hospitals and clinics, people had elements and conditions and circumstances. And so, and even today, storytelling is very, very crucial and important because we have these stories that we tell ourselves and we accept these stories, and then it blocks our ability to express exactly who we are. So it was also the first method of teaching before there were teachers and et cetera. But I did a workshop maybe 20, 25 years ago. It's some time ago. And there was a lady that made comments, and this is not a generalization to you. It's just some information. But anyway, we had an activity in this workshop, and I had done a guided visualization with the participants in the workshop. And after this visualization, they had an activity, and the activity was to journal about their experience. So they had had a journey in this visualization, and there were quite a lot of people there. There was one particular person who was not writing. Everyone else was writing. So I went over to this person who happened to be a lady, and I asked her if she had a concern or some, you know, what was the situation that she wasn't writing. And so she said she wasn't able to take the journey. And so I said, okay, so just journal about not being able to take the journey. That must bring up something for you. And so she said, okay. And So she began to write. Now, this was a Friday night, the first night. The next day was Saturday. And when she, now in this story, I have to give you a little bit of the story. There were two characters, there were several characters, but the two main characters, they were eaglets. And, but they were like night and day different. One of them succeeded through whatever process it went through, but the other one spent all of its time trying to be like, because they were actually in the barnyard with the chickens. So the one that succeeded did not, for whatever reason, he didn't associate or affiliate with the chickens in the barnyard. The other one, he continuously, day after day, tried to be like the chickens, but he wasn't like them. He didn't look like them. He didn't walk like them. His beak was different. He couldn't pick up his food like they could. And worst of all, he had this weird-looking thing on top of his head. So he spent time then exploring, trying to make himself look like the chickens, and a whole bunch of other things. So fast forward in the story. This was Friday night. They got the story after they did the journaling. So they had the visualization, then the journaling, and then the story. And after the story, you know, most of the time we can find ourselves in the story, whether you're looking at a sacred text or a childhood favorite story. Some reason that we resonate with these things that we encounter in life. So the next morning, this lady came over to me, and she was kind of excited, and she said, I just wanted to share what had happened to her when she got home. She had an epiphany, and she said, you know, last night when I was when I couldn't take the journey, and when we had the story, she had associated herself with the eaglet that succeeded in life. And because she herself saw herself as successful, she was a businesswoman, a successful businesswoman. So she had a nice clientele. Her income was good and so forth and so on. But what she said was her father had been her coach and guided her thing that she had done, and so she had done these things very well under his mentoring. And she went from her father's house to marriage, and then she married a man that took over where her father left off. And so he kind of played the same role in her life that her father had played. And so she continued to be successful. But now, according to what she was telling me, when it came time for her to be independent, she couldn't fly. And I don't know if you get that or not.
No, I understand.
Yeah. So anyway, and of course, you probably have observed that, Lori, when you watch other people. I've seen it when someone dies in someone's life and they've had a great life up to that moment, and now all of a sudden they have no clue what to do, because they haven't really had to do anything but enjoy a good life, you know. And so, and that's nothing wrong with that, but I'm just offering that as some information. There's always more available than whatever you have. And so just the question alone of, you know, what would I, you know, in the context of wanting to help others, that's great. But then the question is, how do I do it? And it's not likely that it's going to come through analysis. Now, I'm not saying that it won't, but usually, you know, there's an expression, we get paralysis from analysis. So there are ways that we can go inward on this inward journey, as it's often called, to explore what is it, because I know you have gifts. We all do, because, you know, God or whatever you would call this presence and power in the universe that's greater than you are, you've been endowed with the same thing that Les Brown and Wilma Rudolph and a lot of others have, so we just need to be able to tap into it. But if you don't know who you really are, and who you really are knows exactly what your gifts are and knows exactly how to connect you with the right people to express the gifts and talents and skills and ability that you have. So part of the work that one would do is to take that inward journey. Because otherwise, then you end up doing things which are not wrong, but they're just not the thing that you came here for. And you did come here with a purpose. And probably it is that yearning that you are addressing right now. It's something in you that wants to be born.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's exactly how I feel. I mean, there's these nudges. I know the direction I'm being guided into. I just don't, well, first of all, I don't think it's time. It'll be probably after the first of the year. I mean, it's just the season that we're in. I don't know, you know, what directions. Where am I going to be going? Do I start right at home? You know, is somebody going to approach me? You know, I don't know. I just know I'm supposed to. I've had people come in and say the wildest things to me out of the blue about my gifts and what they feel
like,
from me. It's awesome.
Can you give me an example? Would you give me an
example?
Well,
as a matter of fact, yes. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, two girls came in. They're not regular customers, but they come in maybe once every 3 months, and I hadn't seen one of the girls for quite some time, and she came in and she says, it's always so peaceful and always so loving here, and she said, and you're always the same. And the other girl says to me, there's something about you, Lori. There's just something about you. You give me goosebumps. And she said, you just make us feel so warm and so special and just on and on. And I'm like, oh, I always attribute it to the Lord. And I always say, well, it's the presence of the Lord here. That's what it is. And they're like, no, it's you. So I just love people. But I always, you know, I do make the effort to make sure that they do feel special. And I take the time with them. It's not all about what I sell. It's not all about a cup of tea or a teapot or a piece of jewelry or whatever. It's not about that. Those are just, you know, what I sell to keep the lights on so that the people can keep coming through the door. But I've kind of developed this over a decade. And then, you know, I mean, there's so many different things. And people come in on a regular basis. There are regulars that come in and sit down and they just start telling you everything. And then you hear what they're saying. And it's so funny because it's not all about what they're saying. It's what they don't say that tells me so much more about their situation. So a lot of people are looking to be cheered up or encouraged or to laugh a little bit more and not take life so serious because it is heavy, you know. It can be very trying and exhausting and frustrating. So they come in to, I think, just feel the peace and the hope. But I don't know. Again, I hear the wonderful, sweet things that they say, but I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it. I do want to speak. I do love to talk. I feel like I was born for that. And I just would love to do it, not in a little way, but in a big way. I have this thing that says, I was here, not for the little things. I do the little things because that's what makes up everything. Everybody does little things. But I think I'm meant for more. And it might sound very grandeur, but I do believe it in my heart.
Well, you know what? You've mentioned the word heart a couple of times, which is great. And it reminds me because you also, I heard you say that you mentioned listening, and it sounds to me like you're a good listener. And people do feel the energy just like you do. You know, when you walk into a place, people don't even have to open their mouths for you to feel the energy, whether it attracts you or repels you. Everything is energy. And you know, the mystics have always known this, and now the scientists are confirming what the mystics have always known, and some scientists who thought that it was all exclusively science are beginning to realize that they are more philosophical than what they had ever imagined themselves to be. So I heard you say you have the business, and they're already availing themselves to you energetically, which is what makes them feel good. And one of the challenges in this, at least in this part of the world, and I suspect in other parts, I've actually lived in another part of the world and traveled extensively, is that people often don't feel heard at all. and it gets increased. Women are less heard than men in the culture that most of us live in nowadays, and then it increases by certain ethnic groups and et cetera. I used to be a consultant with a group years ago, and they would train trainers that would be sent from different places. And one of the things that would happen is that we had to practice listening skills. And because, you know, you probably have had the experience of talking, and before you could finish, somebody jumps, and then maybe you jump back in or somebody else does, so that eventually whatever was going to be said in the beginning never gets said. And because, you know, it's been a male-dominated society for many, many years, and then as things began to change, so that women began to show up, but they were showing up with that same male energy and are only now in recent years and decades beginning to recognize that what works for the male is good for the male but not good for the female. So there's something to this ability to listen to people that is healing in itself. And I heard you say that you have this business, so maybe until you discover, not discover by exploring, but as you go within and begin to ask the questions, just what, you know, the comments that you made, you can turn them into questions.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know about the plan, you don't know about the play, you don't know about the approach. Well, that's true, but it is already known, and it can be revealed to you if you set the conditions for that to happen. So you can,
okay,
you can do that by exploring that, and a good time to do it is before you go to bed. You know, because,
okay,
you know, what happens is what gets in the way when we are awake is our conscious mind. It's the conscious mind that tells you all the impossibilities. You've never done that before. What makes you think you could do it? And who do you think wants to come to you? And who wants to pay to hear you speak? You say it all
right,
the time for free. So I have to pay for you to speak.
Right.
To me. You know, so there are all these
right,
things, and it's, and all of them are potentially bits of information that you can use constructively in terms of the direction that you want to go in your life. So you began to explore, and it requires, let me see, what is the word that I want? You know, you, a lot of times we just don't want to hear what we have to say to ourselves about ourselves, but we do have all this information there. And the fact that you have talent, skill, and ability that's useful to other people, that may be true, and I'm sure that it is, but it may not be exactly tied into your purpose. For example, I used to teach school, and then when I relocated, I decided that I had retired. I decided to supplement my income, and so I began teaching. And what was interesting is that every day, I didn't teach every day. I chose to teach about 3 days a week. I would be exhausted every time I came home. But the classes, there were about 25 or 30 students per class, and if it was 25, at least 20 of them were well-behaved and et cetera, but there would be three or four that would
mm-hmm,
be acting out. It wasn't enough for me to feel it was incongruent with the way I felt. And so I finally
mm-hmm,
had to acknowledge to myself that that was not what I was here for at that particular time in my life. And so I
mm-hmm,
had, I made the decision and took a leap and just stopped it, you know. And so sometimes, you know, the thing wasn't illegal, immoral, illicit, none of that. So and they had a need. I had the experience. I had this, all of these things that make it seem like it's an okay thing to do. And it's not that it's no okay, as Khrushchev would say, but is it the purpose? Is it in alignment? What is the purpose you came for? And is the thing that you're doing in alignment with your purpose or not? You know, as you began to explore this, and I would say get a journal and then
okay,
begin to know these little synchronicities that occur in your life. And I'm sure there are many of them that occur regularly. And especially you notice what these people are saying to you. So they are giving you some encouragement and, you know, to follow your dream, so to speak. So I would say begin to find out what is the dream. Nothing is impossible. If Les Brown had listened to what the doctor said, then he never would be making $20,000 an hour as he does now and traveling around the world and just, you know, with fully funded trips and et cetera. And the same thing, Wilma Rudolph, of course, has passed on, but she made a decision early in life that she would not be limited to the little small country town that she grew up in. And so, of course, naturally she became, as an Olympic champion, a world traveler, and et cetera, and many other things happened to her before she left the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, Lori, you know, this urging that you have, it's like, you know, in terms of an appetite, literally physical appetite, you know, sometimes I did a program years ago called, what was it called, Thin Within. And in Thin Within, there were certain things that we had to do because, you know, many of us eat without really regard to what we're eating, what is the benefit of the food. Usually, many of us eat just for taste or because we're hungry, and but taste does not mean for your well-being nutritionally. And I've been guilty of that before. And so one of the things that they suggested in there that I thought was a good idea for those who are wanting to change their program, and I don't want to say diet because diet often triggers something psychologically that makes us hungry. But if it's something that you're really craving, that would be like a yearning that you're talking about to fulfill
mm-hmm.
your purpose. When we're really craving something, but we have made a decision not to indulge in the thing that we crave, so you don't get it, but you find a substitute, and you consume the thing that you thought would be the substitute, but it doesn't satisfy you, so then you go get something else, and you repeat this pattern, and pretty soon you will have consumed much more than you would have if you had gotten the thing you craved in the first place.
Right.
So you end up
right.
with more calories. The recommendation was, if you're really craving something, just get it and just taste enough just to satisfy that urge, that craving that you have, and leave the rest alone. Otherwise, you're going to do more likely more damage that way than in the other way. So this yearning is a craving from your soul. And the program that I'm talking about, Beauty Shop for the Soul, you know, it's about discovering yourself because, you know, all the action and activity and transformation occurs in the soul. You know, if your conscious mind, you are in control of that. That's why, you know, you often hear people say, don't go to sleep with the TV on or the radio or things that, you know, while you're sleeping, there are things that come up that are not conducive to peace and well-being, like the late-night news and all these other things, horror movies or things that are just, excuse me, don't soothe your soul. So you control, we do, the conscious mind, but the subconscious mind is what controls us. So if you look in the context of seed, soil, and plant, when you think of that sequence and the law of the seed, your belief, your thoughts are your seed, and the soul is your subconscious mind. And then the plant is what comes as a result of the seed that's been sown into the soil. So the parable is the seed, soil, and plant. You can relate to that just from knowing a little bit about plants and how they grow. But the analogy is, spiritually speaking, your thoughts are your seed. It is the conscious mind that you get to choose what you're going to sow. And then it goes into the soul, which is the subconscious mind. Seed is your thought. The soul is the subconscious mind. And, of course, the plant is the outcome, the result, the effect. And like all gardens, there are weeds in them. And you have to constantly weed and reseed. Or, of course, there's also, you know, in context of the seed, if you go back to the days of antiquity, let me check the time. Okay, I just needed to check the time. In the days of antiquity, you know, they didn't have all the modern technology that farmers have nowadays, where they have sophisticated sophisticated ways of sowing seeds. And so the farmers would carry these big old bags. You may have seen them. They would be full of seeds, and as they would walk down these rows that they had holes, they would just throw the seeds. But some of them fell on hard ground. Some of them were scorched by the sun. Some of them the birds took away. There are a number of things that happened so that not all the seeds went into that soil and then were nurtured by the wind and the rain and the sun and all of this so that they could take root and then spring forth. Well, the same thing is true of the thoughts that you have. When you have a thought and within almost or maybe at that self-same second, you tell yourself things like, for example, God, I'd love to have $1 million. And then as quickly it's like, but how could I have $1 million? Tell nobody in my family has ever had $1 million. You know, you have all these things you tell yourself that are not in alignment with truth. So that would be like these seeds falling either dry land or all of the other things that I just mentioned a while ago, if you get the picture. So every seed has to, has to be nurtured in order for it to become, in order for an oak tree to come from an acorn, it has to be put into the soil. You know, back in the 1920s, whoever they were, King Tut's tomb, you know, the Egyptian pharaoh that was a child, and there were seeds in there. You know, they would bury the pharaohs with all of, my goodness, a whole bunch of things in the tombs there. And all of these years later, a few thousands of years, they opened up that tomb, and there were seeds in there that had lain dormant. They hadn't been planted them. And when they planted them, they grew, even though they had been there for a couple of thousand years. So the fact that you and I and the rest of us may have reached several decades in our lives, that's nothing compared to a couple of thousand years. So some of these seeds that have been sown into the soil of our subconscious mind get activated without us even knowing they're there. You know, only 10% of what's happening to us is coming from our conscious awareness. Most of it, 90% they say, and greater, is coming from the subconscious. We don't even know. Lower that. It's like mining for gold. And so, it's a process, but it doesn't have to be long and drawn out. I heard you say a couple of other things. You mentioned a time, and you said that, it couldn't happen until a certain time. Who said so? You? Not that what you say doesn't have value, but the infinite mind of the universe, there is no time and space dimension. There's no clock, no calendar. That's a man-made thing. And that's how, so what we're talking about in Beauty Shop for the Soul is that aspect of you that you can't see, can't taste, or smell, or touch. And so, you know, the intuition is called like the sixth sense. And without the activation of the sixth sense, the five senses lose their value because, you know, they can lead you astray. You know, if you've ever stood on a railroad track and looked at the railroad tracks in the distance, they look like they run together. Have you ever noticed that?
Yes.
Yes. Well, yes. Do they run together?
No.
No. No, they don't. They're laid with precision. And so they're all the same distance, no matter how far they go. Otherwise, how could the train stay on the track? You know, it couldn't. So the same. So I just said that to say, you know, that's how our senses, one of the ways they can distort us. The same thing. Years ago, Pepsi and Coca-Cola did this experiment because there were a lot of people who said that they could always tell the taste of Pepsi from the taste of Coca-Cola. So it was at a big Dodger game, and so they had these two stands, one from Pepsi and one from Coke, except you didn't know which one was which. You just got the taste from both of the stands, and then you had to tell them which one you thought you were drinking. Well, I don't have to tell you, most of the people could not identify what they were drinking. So, yeah. So that's another one of those senses, that's taste. And if you've ever, you know, pulled up, I've done it more than once. Sometimes, you know, when they have not parallel parking, but parking side by side in the car. And so if you ever, as a driver, pull up in a spot and at the precise moment that you pull up, the car right next to you, and doesn't matter which side of you it's on, it backs out. And
I know.
Yeah, and what happened to you when that when you had that experience? Do you know what happened? What did you feel?
You feel like you're still moving.
Yeah, exactly. But you know you stopped.
Yeah.
What?
That's the weirdest feeling.
Yeah. Consider all the senses that we have, the sight, sound, taste, touch, and smell. And they're invaluable to us, but the most valuable part of us, you're not going to see it, taste it, touch it, smell it, you know, or you have a sense of feeling it, but it's like any muscle. If you don't cultivate it, it's going to be weak, and you won't even hear it. It'll be talking to you, but you won't hear it, and then even may think that it's not operating, but it is. So, you know, with our practice, tuning in, turning away from the illusions of the world, that's where the intellect is fully operational, and this other part of you, that consciousness, that is that higher consciousness. You know, there's I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. Well, lifting up your eyes means to see above the level of the circumstance or condition. So when you're seeing time and space and all this other stuff, you can raise up your eyes, meaning your consciousness, to the place where you can tune in and tap in to what is the purpose for which you've come in this lifetime. Now, it sounds really simple, and I think a lot of people expect, you know, thunderbolts and all this other stuff, but it really just requires the willingness and the discipline. And usually we don't do these things alone. It helps. And then, of course, I'm going to have to cut this off here, and it's about time to wrap up, Lori. And so I invite you to call back again, but I would also encourage you that, you know, to begin asking as the last thing, you know, when you get in bed or just before you go to bed, you know, take some deep breaths, because as you do that, you shift the energy that is in you, and you become more receptive to hearing, you know, what that still small voice has to say to you. So with that, I'm going to say thank you for calling, and
thank you.
You know, I thank you and encourage you to call back again. I'd love to speak to you and tell your friends to call. Give them the number and have them call, and we can explore all this. Thank you so much, Lori.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Call again. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Beauty Shop for the Soul with host Joanne Buckner here on Earth Angels Radio. For more information on Joanne, please visit earthangelsradio.com. You can also contact Joanne by email at ourbeautifulsouls@gmail.com or call her at 702-622-4937. What better way to transform than a day at the beauty shop? Beauty Shop for the Souls.